This is Kent Rendell with Autocross Talk, and today we have Danny K.O. Danny, how's it going?
Pretty good. Hey, how's it going, Rich Kinch? Or Ranch?
Great, great. Yeah, see, we talked a little bit ahead of time, and now you know you can make fun of my name with the inch and wrench and bench. So Danny agreed to be on Autocross Talk because he's an autocross nut. So start take me back. What got you into this? What were you doing before this, and about what year did you start doing this?
Oh, boy, I started autocrossing at the end of 2006. And before that, I'm a hobby guy. So, I started off playing basketball, then I played golf, and then I did marathon running, and then, riding around, and I raced motorcycles. Then got into bicycle racing, and then I started, restoring old cars, those muscle cars back in where everybody was doing it back in the early 2000s. And then I found it was kind of interesting. I found a Miata with a hardtop for $1,300, and then at that time nobody wants one. And then I saw it and I go, it'd be kind of nice to have that. And then I started reading into it and I heard this, I heard about this spec Miata race. So what I did was stupid me, I went out and bought some suspension and then bought a cage and put it all together and show up at the track on the very last track day that was available in 2006. But I had two different seats, so the instructor won't ride with me. Then I got stuck. So basically, I built a car, got nowhere to run. and then a friend of mine that I know at the time, and he says, why don't you go do autocrossing? And I ask him, what is that? I'd never heard of it before. And he says, just run around the cones in the parking lot. And obviously, I told him I wasn't interested. So I know nothing about it. And then he goes, or just sit home until next year. So I found an event. I started looking for autocross event. And then the only autocross event I can find was the last event that Autocrossers Inc. ran in at Ripken Stadium. So I drove the car, went to Ripken Stadium, and then I saw a bunch of cars running in the parking lot. I said, I got this. And then after my run, and I think I was, second from last or something like that in the novice group. And then that was the end of the season. Right then and there, I figured this is cool and I got to try this again. So the next event, I showed up with a brand new Evo.
So wait. So we got to get into this at some point. How many cars did you own up until this point? And then how many would you guess you've owned after that?
I think I probably had about, this was 10 years ago. I think at that time I have probably about 55 to 60 cars.
Okay, so this addiction was already there.
Yeah. No, I started buying cars when I was little. So, that's a long story. But to keep the story short, when I was younger, I'm not sure if we should even go there. But when I was younger, my family was pretty well to do. But then by the time I was a teenager, my father lost all the money. When I was 10 years old, my dad would promise me a brand new Porsche 935, when I was a little kid. But then, of course, by the time I was a teenager, I had nothing. And then the funniest thing was, is at that time, my dad was married to his wife then. So I had a stepbrother my age. I had to spend all my money to buy a beat up Volkswagen Bug just to get to work. My dad bought my stepbrother a Porsche.
Whoa.
So that became a lifetime
I'll give you a hug.
I would say a lifetime of revenge. then at that time, and I was 17 years old. I basically told myself I'm going to buy whatever the car I want to buy that anytime I want to, and so that became a sort of a really bad addiction.
Oh, yeah, I slightly share in the addiction that I'm talking about, although luckily I keep buying used things, and now that I have so many Civics, I don't want to buy anymore. Yeah. I just am like, I might as well pay somebody to fix these things. Literally, my car is leaving the state to have somebody else work on it. I'd much rather farm at this point than wrench it. I'm like, but I want to go fast, so I understand that. So I remember going the first autocross and being behind by 10 seconds, and that's what hooked me. Well, how could somebody, especially actually it was a Miata, how could a Miata be 10 seconds faster on like a minute-long course?
Right.
What do you remember about that first one? You said you liked it and you wanted to come back. What do you remember about that first race?
Well, that first race was interesting. I remember showing up in a car, and then I didn't even know what class would it be, and then somebody told me I need to run in CST. So I did that. I remember running with Sean Roberts, and then there was a guy named Sam Schechter, and Sam is actually now a road racer. He's racing for some professional team now. But at that time, I think he was, maybe just finished college or something like that. And that was also his first couple of events. And I remember this kid, 20 some years younger than me, Sam. He basically started a few weeks, maybe a couple of months before me. And he was 4 or 5 seconds faster than me in the same Miata, same kind of Miata. Right. So I kind of tell myself that, I know I'm uncoordinated and getting older, but I can't be that bad. So there was something that I don't want to say I'm out there to prove something, but I figure I got to be able to go a little bit faster if I do this more. So.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and that's what I'm sure we'll get to. Seat time. I went to my first nationals my first year ever because Jeff Lundgren was like, you should go. So I went. I remember talking to somebody. Maybe it was actually the second season, and I counted up how many races I'd done. It was less than 20. And the person I was talking to said they'd done over 20 in that year. So it hit me. I'm like, oh, seat time's important here. Oh, it's funny. You're in CSP again now, aren't you?
Yeah, but I didn't knew I was running in CSP before either. So this wasn't designed.
Yeah, exactly. You just showed up with a track car that was spec Miata-ish. So I remember showing up the first one in a 97 Civic EX Coupe with suspension that my brother put on it, but 80,000-mile tires. What were you running tire-wise back then?
I think on the spec Miata, I did ask a few people to to put on, and they told me to put something 615.
So something decent. So at least you didn't show up there like me going,
I put some tires. Maybe it was Falcon Zinis. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Falcon Zini 615 or something. That was what I put on the Miata. And then I obviously had a couple months to think it over, over the winter, when I bought that Evo. I think the second time I showed up, I might have the RE01 Bridgestones back then. I think that was the hot tire that came out. So I'm a computer guy, so obviously I try to do whatever research I can find, right? And at that time, there wasn't much of an internet, I guess. Well, there's some internet, I guess. There's quite a bit of internet back then. But then I tried to do as much research as I could. But I can tell you that on that second event that I did, my first run that went out on the Evo, it was so fast, I couldn't handle it. And then going to the second corner, I spun. And then I completely got disoriented, and then I just drove to the next cone I can find, almost had a head on. I almost had a head on with J.R. Fisher out of Philly. So I got to know J.R. really well after that. but fortunately I learned that lesson, if I get lost or whatever, I drive slowly.
Yeah. Which Evo did you have, by the way?
I had an Evo 9 SE, and then it turned out to be the STU car for a while.
Yeah, so I had an Evo 8, but I only autocrossed it once or twice. So yeah. I had no front limited slip, which I realized very quickly was not good.
Right. And then that was kind of interesting because I showed up, and then a couple months later, I showed up in the DC autocross school. I actually took a whole bunch of school. From that point on. And then that's how I got to meet my first co-driver. Mike Neri was an instructor, and he came over, and the first thing he said to me is, I like to hear to meet my competition, right? And this car is going to destroy my car. He had a M5 then. And then I had no idea what he was talking about. He says, if you want to drive this thing, you'll drive it. You can drive it anytime. I don't really care. That was before I even realized that it was this co-driving thing going on, right? So then, a couple months later, and then, he asked me, and he goes, he basically say, hey, there's a DC Pro Solo. If asked me if I was interested in driving it, with him, and then I said okay, and then at that point on, that's how we became co-drivers for the next couple of years.
So you started in pros your first year?
Yeah. My fifth event was the Pro Solo, was the DC Pro.
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, that's my addiction, and I waited. I don't know, it was 4 or 5 years or something.
Oh, no.
It was quite a bit, and I realized, wait, people keep going somewhere and they're winning something.
Yeah.
So I remember going out to Utah and just being blown away how much fun that was. That was, yeah, the beginning of the addiction.
Right. And I fried 4 clutches in 2 years. So they told,
it tells you. That's no reason. I thought, oh, I'm going to get this Evo and I'm going to rally cross it and do all kinds of things, which I never did. And I talked to somebody that was in Street Mod back then, and it was a minimum of $10,000, and he talked about the clutch and the transfer case, and that was the end of it. I'm like, nope, yeah. I'll stick with my slow Integra and be happy there.
Right.
I just, like we talked before, anything that breaks is quickly on the outs with me. I like to show up there and actually be able to run.
Right. But fortunately, I only fried clutches, and everything else seems to be okay. And then, but one experience I learned from that was, as far as the suspension setup, is Mike Neri is a good friend with Sam Strano, so Mike would ask Sam to help us to set this car up, and then both of them would drive the car and take a couple of runs, and it comes back and say, I think we need a little bit more softer springs in the front and it's different in the back, and then I would go on and get the springs and I would spend the whole weekend, a week trying to put those springs in, and then I would show up in the next event, which is the following weekend, they would drive it and say, I think we should add a little bit more, and then I would spend another week taking everything off. I think that whole year. I just sat there and swapped springs like 25 times out of the 25 weeks that we.
Oh, but so that's what I tell some people. I think I got spoiled because I went to the Audi in stock class for a couple of years and then the Integra, I couldn't change that.
Right.
And I never even really changed the shock, so it came down to more so could I get the maximum out of the car without fiddling with it. Although that might be a detriment now because literally I still don't really fiddle with that stuff.
Right. I never really learned the beauty of the street or stock class until 2012. So basically for the first 6 years, all I did was just mess around with stuff. I did the STU for a couple of years and then change all that stuff and tune and then after that I actually got burned out a little bit from doing all that work.
Yeah.
And then DC at that time has a huge contingent of F-125 shifters. So I got into the shifters, and I at that time we met a whole bunch of new autocross friends, and I got a whole bunch of other guys to get into F-125 shifters. It will have 24 shifters in an event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, like that one year, I think 2009, 2010, we have 17 to 24 F-125 guys in DC. And of course,
Wow. That
was probably the most fun I've ever had, at autocrossing. Like everybody, none of us knows what's going on. we'll ask Brian Garfield on how to set things up. And then at that time, we always thought that, Garfield knows everything. He's not telling us. Then we realized he doesn't know anything. He learned everything from Julian.
The blind leading the blind.
Brian, 11-year-old Julian Garfield would be telling Brian what to do, So then that was the best time. But I ended up running F-125 for 3 years. I really didn't learn anything about autocrossing. All I did was just have a good time spinning and going as fast as I can, just doing stupid things. But those are good times.
Tell me this. So how much – okay, we didn't say. You were the 2012 Spirit of the Sport Award winner, thus having fun, being friendly. How much of that draws you into autocross versus the competition?
I think I'm always looking at fun first than anything else. I never really gotten I don't even think I'm competitive now, but I never really thought about that I was driving fast or actually have a chance of doing well ever, really. Fun was always the number one priority. But the thing is, it's not just – I mean, for me, it's really not just about fun. It's more like if I get there, I want everybody to have fun, not just me.
Yeah.
I think I can manage to have a good time pretty much any time, anywhere, but I think for a little bit of time, I usually like to go to an event where everybody's having a good time. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. So that's important to me. I don't want to go to an event where everybody's miserable and not happy or yachting each
other. Yeah. If it was all competition and not fun and some friends and such.
Yeah. So I do my best when I get to certain events where if I see the mood is a little kind of, tense. I will manage to try to joke around and try to get people to loosen up a little bit. And that's what I like to do. Yeah, maybe.
Man, you got to hang out with me and keep me loose at Nationals. Yeah, just keep me really loose.
Yeah, maybe that's a little bit selfish on my part, but I like to see happier people, you know.
Hey, that's a great goal to have.
Yeah.
Keep everybody happy. Keep them happy. So it sounds like you autocrossed a whole bunch to begin with. How many runs a season or events do you think you were getting to?
Oh, my gosh. I started counting 3-4 years ago. I don't think I did any less when I first started. I know the last couple of years I did at least 450 runs. Per year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Plus, you took schools early on, which is key too.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. I do every test and tune that's available in DC. I go, and then, I mean, I think last year I did 440 some runs, and the year before I did 450 some runs, and a couple years back, I used to co-drive with James Newman. I drove with Newman.
Yeah.
It's a Newman and I had this competition on, you know, who can do more events. I think he and I were doing, you know, like I beat him by a day. I think I did 59 autocross days and he did 58 or something like that.
So how much golf did you play when your hobby was golf?
Oh my God, that's I think in 1997, I can tell you that between 96, 97, 98, those 3 years, I probably play 500 rounds of golf per year.
Oh,
and I'm not kidding.
How's your back doing? I mean, you did shifter and you did golf. Your back's strong, huh? You're Knox.
In 98, I actually went to the hospital because I tore my front muscle from playing golf too much.
Oh.
Yeah, I had a casual chondritis or something. I think it's something like that. And then I went to the emergency room. I thought I had a heart attack because it was just chest pain. I couldn't go away.
Oh.
And then it turns out because I played, you know, too much golf. No, I have this obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah. Well, just at some level, yes. Something's fun, so you really can focus in and have fun. Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
That is a good thing. And that's one thing I got to mention is which tires were testing both the Bridgestones and the Rivals this past year. Is that what you posted up quite a bit about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's always helpful. That's something else Danny does is he will share information. He's not trying to like figure something out and keep it back as a secret. So that's what I love about most of the people in this sport is that they will tell you what's going on. They'll probably let you drive their car. They will share. That's how I am. I just want to see how fast I can be and can I make other people faster.
Right. I mean, to me, you know, especially something like, I mean, I don't, you know, I can't keep a secret anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But from my perspective, you know, like, you know, with these two tires, or when if I was doing any kind of a, you know, the sort of equipment testing, it's very personal and subjective anyway, so whatever I say might not be what everybody else found.
True, which you were good about saying, too. You kept saying, hey, this is just me. Of course, you downplayed that, like, you couldn't race at all. You have no skills, which you're not giving yourself any credit, but yeah.
But I think the bottom line is you know, there are certain things that everybody would do, and they would do exactly the same way anyway. So and then the end results are always going to be fairly similar if you do enough. So why not, I definitely like to share stuff, especially when I know that anybody else would do this, it would just be their waste of time and money. So,
yeah.
So I already wasted time and money on this. So why not just share it so we can save somebody else some time? Because
yeah, you like to help people. So you realize that was helpful.
Right. And then I know that other people would, you know, there's always going to be a group of people that are going to listen to some of the things that people say and say, well, yeah, I like to see it for myself. And I'm the same kind of a person. So you know, in fact, you know, I know Sam Strano is always frustrated with me when he tells me, hey, you know, why don't you try this? And I will always try something else. But the thing is that that's just me. I like to try different things just to figure out what the heck is going on, right? And then but the thing is once I found out, I can honestly report back and say, hey, this is what I found, and then, you know, take for whatever it's worth. And so So I never really thought about you know, doing all this testing to determine if something is faster than the other, but it's more about just sharing the experience and say, hey, this is what I found, and you guys can take it for whatever it's worth. You know, that was always been my attitude. So.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of us appreciated that. So
yeah.
I ended up trying both tires, and I settled on the Bridgestone. What did you settle on?
I settled on the Bridgestone, even though I thought that both tires are really, really similar. I mean, you know, one thing that I thought it was at that time, and it's probably because of driving skill, is, you know, one of the first things that we learn from autocrossing, especially driving the Evo, is when you turn in, if the front end is not biting, you turn in more. I mean, you can't turn in more because it just push.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of one thing I learned. But with arrivals was really strange. I mean, I can turn in, and then usually when it doesn't turn in anymore, with arrivals, I just turn in more. It would just grip more. I don't know how that worked, but it actually, once they started just turning in more, it actually speeds up somewhat.
Yeah, it liked enough slip angle.
Yeah.
So let me tell everybody listening, I think one of the first things to be faster in autocross is you have to know that if you're turning the wheel and you're scrubbing off, not to turn the wheel more, but instead to open the wheel usually.
Right.
Although I'm going to second what Danny just said. I didn't necessarily like the Rival, but because I found, and kind of like the Toyo as well, you could turn in and then you didn't know where the limit was at. So you could turn more or less. It's almost like you had to saw the wheel or go back and forth to find out where the heck are you at.
Right. Right. So the you know, on my test, I always find them that the times were really similar, and then especially after I know the course really, really well. But I can tell you that for some reason, I like the RE71 more because it just seems a little easier to drive. I don't know what it is. It just seems a little easier to drive, so I'm a little bit more confident with it. And then I know that it works really well at a cooler temperature, so right at the start, I can just go at it. And then because of that, I think some of them are, some of the side effect is since I'm confident and comfortable with the tires, I trust it. So then I drive harder.
Yep.
I think that's probably what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, and I should admit that actually the second day at Nationals, because my co-driver liked the Rivals, he really thought that they had a bigger sweet spot and that the RE71 Bridgestones were much crisper, which is what I love. They were so much like a Hoosier to me. That the second day, him being a first driver, I didn't put the cold Bridgestones on the back because I saw people spinning. So I actually ran a combination, which I've done a couple different times, just to have grip in the rear. I wasn't willing, like you were saying, to have Bridgestones that were cooler in the rear for my first run, which would probably be a throwaway.
Right.
So,
yeah,
so what else do you think that made you – so you're talking about feel somewhat. You thought the Bridgestone was better. What else do you find has made you better? What have you learned through the schools and just – what makes you faster? What do you do well? What do you not do so well? What are you working on?
I think the biggest thing was, my personality is that when I go through the motions of doing stuff, I just kind of go through the motions. So I do a lot of them, but I don't necessarily pick up anything. I think most of the time I focus on the fun part of it. So if somebody made a mistake or somebody did a spin or something, the whole day, that will be the only thing I remember. I typically don't remember what I did driving wise.
Yeah.
I tend to remember what the good part of or the fun part, but not the headache part, I guess. So I can honestly say that the first 5-6 years I really didn't learn very much other than just driving a lot out of it. But then the last three four years I think most of the stuff I learned, I think with the help of solo storms and stuff like that, you can actually look at what you did and evaluate things. I think one of the things that's helping now is I can actually go back to think about what I did in the previous run and actually remember what I did.
So Lily, it even helps you remember by looking at the data.
Yeah.
To plan your next run.
Right, and then, so I don't think that's something that even though I thought I was doing that, I really wasn't doing that. I can say that the first 7-8 years 7 years at least. Was, after I did my run, and I will always remember certain parts of the run, but I don't remember all the runs. So I always think that there are certain places I made mistakes on, but it turns out I actually did okay with it. And it's the part that I thought that I was driving very, very well on is the one that I was slow.
Yeah, you didn't know. That's like tell some people, if you don't know what you're doing well and not well, you don't know where to improve because you might be changing the wrong thing.
Right. So I can honestly say that maybe the first 7 years, I think majority of the time on the places where I thought I did well, usually I did poorly. In the places where I didn't do well, I actually did okay. And I don't know why that is, but it's always been the case. I think the last couple years now, since I've been doing this a little bit more and focused a little bit more and not just kind of mess around and have fun, I actually try to improve. So nowadays, I can go back and look at the data and say, this is where it is. Or maybe this last couple of years, or maybe this last year was the first time I can come back from a run and say, I didn't do very well there. And I can go back and look at the data and say, I didn't
really confirm
do well there. I can confirm it with the hard facts.
Yeah.
And then what I thought was actually right. But But the first 70 years, I can honestly say what I thought it wasn't. Whatever I thought it was always wrong.
Yeah, okay. So that's where, if nothing else, Silicon borrow these different data acquisition systems. Literally, the fact that I paid the money for the TrackMate and I found out that cutting distance was key, it paid for itself just knowing that, like, okay, I got greedy and I went wide instead of shutting it down and being tight and tidy.
Right.
For so many of us, you do need to know, get somebody else in your car. They may be about the same skill level or even compare to yourself. You're going to do something different most runs that you can compare to.
Right. And I think nowadays, you know, if I see a huge gap of my time versus somebody else's time, I think most of the time, and then in the following runs, I would just take more and more risk of driving it tighter and tighter. So, and usually I notice that that's when I can, especially the perfect example would be I was running with Ryan Carwan locally on the same ND Miata, and we're prepped exactly the same, and that was his first time driving the car. It was my first time driving the car. And then he was beating me by 1.3 seconds or something like that after the first couple of runs. And then I realized that then I couldn't think of anything else. I mean, I was driving as hard as I could. And then I realized that he is the master of cutting distance. So I go, we must not be driving the same distance. So I started cutting distance on him. And then I got ended up to be 4/10 slower than he was, but you know, which I was really happy about. But I end up cutting like, you know, 0.9, 1 second worth of difference just by trying to be as tight as I could.
And that's what I can tell people is literally in the TrackMate, I was comparing with, I think it's Chris Swearingen. We'd send back TrackMate files. He's like, dude, you don't brake very long because it would tell you the total time braking and show the distance. And I would cut 30 to 50 feet off of a course easily.
Right.
Off of some different people. And that's where if you see me walking course, which I try not to do a lot because I really want to look far ahead by not knowing the course too well, I'll see people walking wide and such. I'll be like, are you seriously going to drive there and spend the distance to get there?
Right.
So that's one thing. Tell me what you do, but I really try to walk a very realistic line with where I'm at in the driver's seat even.
Yeah.
You do that?
I do that 100%. One thing I did notice though was obviously when I was talking about driving tight, I'm not talking about bombing into a corner and then turning it as tight as I could. I think one thing that I learned to drive tighter was and it actually works on every car was I tried to set it up the line the way it was supposed to. I actually learned that from watching little Julian Garfield when he's running at 10 years old, you know, he will always try to maintain, he never brakes, right? And he just throws his cars right in there and never brakes. But one thing that he would do versus any other little kids I will watch is he will always set up the corner entry the way that I was supposed to. And so I guess by driving the tighter line, I will also try to set up the corner entry the way it was supposed to, but at the tightest line possible. I guess.
So is that, another way to say that is you're trying to make it an easier turn?
Yes. I want to make, what I've been trying to do is I try to drive the tightest line possible, but I will always, I'm also trying not to scrub off too much speed in order to do that. I guess that's kind of, contradictory itself, but I'm trying not to drive go into a corner and then park it, turn around and go out.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to drive it tight like that. I want to drive the tightest line possible while maintaining the momentum and not giving up, speed.
Yeah, because basically I always break this down to whoever's on the tightest line at the maximum speed is going to win.
Yes.
Because, and that's one rule I have is in a 180, I'm pretty sure John Ames, somebody gave this to me, the tightest line through a 180 is the fastest. Because we don't have banked turns. Now, maybe somebody somewhere does. But without that, so every time I'm walking, I'm like, anything past the, let's say, a 180 turn cone is just extra distance to get there and extra distance back.
Yes.
And if you haven't ever done this and people listening, if you will graph out like a 50-foot diameter and then a 40-foot diameter or 45, 4 feet, 3 feet, look at the difference through a big turn. It is amazing how many feet you can save just by being tight and tidy.
Yes. I guess the best way for me to describe it the other way that I just want to make sure I definitely don't do is I don't want to make a 180 sweeper into a triangle.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, by diving and shutting down.
Right.
And see, and I swear the book said, and I so agree, this is what probably I do pretty well, is braking hard and somewhat late. And I probably trail brake a little bit too much. But they're basically saying whoever brakes the best by not overbraking too much, but by making that brake zone shorter is the best. Now, if we drove in and parked it, then you're not your maximum grip anymore. So I totally agree. You can't just go and make a triangle out of it or a point at the – you have to keep an arc because every car turns with an arc.
Yeah, exactly. So it's whatever the arc that I can maintain and at the tightest is what I've been trying to do.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's 100% right, obviously, but that's what I've been trying to do. I mean, I know when I first started autocrossing, I tried to conserve distance by making everything into a triangle. but I don't do that anymore. And then obviously, once I started making an arc, I started getting sloppier and started driving huge arcs.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, that doesn't work well neither. And then so I think the last couple of years, I tried to set up my entry and still driving the tightest arc possible. And then the setup is one to eliminate driving it like a triangle. I guess that's the best way to describe
it. Yeah, by setting up for it. And that's where I always tell everybody, looking ahead is the key. So even in a 180, I want to glance over and see the exit and scan my eyes back and forth to those, let's say, the cone that's going to limit me or the limits to the inside. If you're looking over there, as Jeff Gordon once said in his book, he doesn't have a speedometer he looks at. His butt tells him how fast to go.
Right.
That only works, though, when you can turn your head and see, oh, the turn is how tight. Instead of memorizing it, you have to look and go, oh, it's right there. Oh, it's way over there.
Yeah.
So tell me this, left foot or right foot breaker?
Obviously, I used to drive a cart in
yep.
shifter, so I left foot brake. I struggled, actually. I left foot brake. I always right foot brake until I started getting to the shifter. Then, obviously, I left foot brake while I was driving the shifter. Then I left for brake when I got into super stock. When I bought my C5 Z06.
Yeah.
And then I struggled, man. Every event I was DFL. Every national event I was DFL. And then Sam finally came to me and going, you know, what are you doing with your left foot? I said, I was left for braking. He says, so this is what he told me. He's a right foot breaker. But that's not the reason why he tells me not to left foot brake. What I was doing was just every time when I get nervous,
yep.
my left foot is on the brake pedal.
It's dragging.
It's
yep.
dragging. So the thing is, then all of a sudden, you know, I'm not really driving it aggressively anymore. And then I just constantly, my foot is just constantly hover over the brakes. Then he says, get off the left foot brake, you know, try right foot so at least I'm not dragging.
Yep.
So I learned that. And then, of course, one thing that got me right after that was, coming from a shifter or something a little bit low power, you know, I'm always, you know, my whole entire right foot is down to the floor, right? So I never really learned how to modulate the throttle. When I was left foot braking, obviously I wasn't modulating the throttle, right? Because I can't modulate the left. How can I modulate the right? Right. So what happened was, once I stopped left foot braking, I started using my right foot to brake, and then the non-modulation problem started showing up, right? Very, very apparent.
Yep.
And then, actually, It took me a good year and a half to learn how to modulate the throttle.
And in that vet, you have to. Like, I always say, like, up here in Denver at this altitude, when you're racing 100 horsepower, 110 horsepower Civic, you don't have to modulate.
Right, right.
But when I'd go to Nationals or somewhere, I'd be like, wow, the car is bouncy because I wasn't modulating. But you guys in the C5, I drove one of those once. And my big thing, I said, do not mash the gas pedal.
Right, right. So obviously, you know, the car was rough. It was hard to control. You know, I tend to spin because I'm just upsetting the car way too much, right? So then, you know, from the modulation of it, it took year and a half to modulate. And then I can tell you, you know, when somebody goes in and say, hey, they can drive any car and be fast at all times, and that's the guy that really knows how to modulate a throttle.
Yeah.
Right. And then anybody else is struggling to kind of learn from car to car to car. That's because they don't know how to modulate the throttle.
Yeah.
Right.
And that,
so that year and a half of learning how to modulate the throttle, and I can see at the end of the, you know, once I started doing that, and that's when I started driving the car the way that it wants to, because now I can use the throttle to turn. Before, I always
yep.
thought that I was using the throttle to turn by mashing it, but no, I wasn't. And then once they started modulating, that's when you can really drive with your right foot, right? I think if when my speed got improved and started doing it better, that's when I think that the first thing I did was I learned how to modulate the throttle, and that's how I got a little bit faster.
Yeah, it's one of the keys you had to learn, and that's where I always wonder, driving rear-wheel drive, which I don't do much, can I be okay with it or not? And nothing, I come back to left foot braking. In my cars, both the Integra I raced forever, or the different ones, and the Civic, I left foot brake, all because I drove an Audi S4, and I learned to left foot brake so it could build boost. So I always tell people that are in a car that's turbo, if it has any lag, left foot braking can really help you there. But you brought up a good point. If you don't know how to modulate the throttle in something like a Vette, you're giving it all. I mean, you're giving a lot up in that case.
Right. I think another thing is I know that a lot of times the people that we're running around with, I mean, there are a lot of you guys are really, really coordinated. You can do a lot of things. Your hand-eye coordination is awesome. And I've seen so many people that can do super well in sports and, play all kinds of instruments and then play drums and use your right hand is the same as your left hand. Your right foot is the same as your right hand. You know, you can do your hands and foot, coordinate all four of your extremities, yeah. Right? I can't.
You played basketball. You told me you were into basketball.
Yeah, but I can't do anything with my left foot as well as I can do with my right foot, just like I can't do anything as well with my left hand as my right hand, right? So there's always something that's dominating. It's just like, my right eye is a little bit more dominating than the left eye, right? It's that type of thing. So I always have a problem opening both my eyes while I was doing trap shooting or something like that, right? So the thing is I can see people that are super coordinated, that their left foot and right foot, their brain can control both feet at ease very, very easily.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I can't even keep myself balanced when I'm walking, right?
So it comes back to, once again, knowing what maybe your limitations are. So some people probably should think about this and not try to left foot brake.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing is, I learned how to play drum one time, right? So you have to use both of your feet and both of your hands. I could never do it.
Yeah.
So I gave up, right? And then I figured out, if I can't play drums, with my feet, how can I modulate that delicately? I can't.
Yeah.
And then the other thing will be, Tom Reynolds always said, that this Indy Miata is the easiest car to do heel toe, right? I can tell you, I tried a bunch of times. It took me like a month and a half just to figure out how that works, and then so I can honestly say that there's going to be limitations to people that really can't do it. So I think that there's no one fixed method to fix anything, because not everybody's built the same way.
And that's a good point, because I know so many people that are fast that only right foot brake or only left foot brake, that it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's what you can do. One thing I've realized is I rely on that left foot braking so much that I don't think I do lifts anymore. So what I like to tell people is, I got hooked, like being beat by 10 seconds. I'm like, how could a Miata beat me? We've got a steering wheel, a gas pedal, and a brake pedal. I was like, I got to be able to figure this out. And once I started left foot braking, now I've realized, okay, I need to come off the brake smooth, which I'm good at sometimes. And sometimes I notice it while I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, that was good and smooth. But so often, to keep my cars from spinning, I'm dragging the brake at times.
Right.
So if you don't left foot brake, you're always getting a little lift in between the braking and the gassing when you come off the gas. Whereas I usually don't get that.
Right.
So I can't induce especially in a front wheel drive car. If you just lift, a lot of times you'll get some rotation.
Right.
Opposite of the Vette, but you can get that. So I would like to tell people that maybe, if you left foot brake, you might start thinking about, are you also just lifting at times to get a car to rotate? That's something I'm looking forward to this year.
Right. And then usually, if I, obviously I don't drive front wheel drive cars. Well, I mean, I drove the Focus. So that was that. And usually for me to combat those kind of problems, I just brake early. I brake early and then get back on the gas earlier. Basically, instead of using the brake to induce rotation, I get my braking done earlier and start to modulate my throttle back on to deal with that rotation. So
you're also probably making sure you came out of the corner fast at maximum speed.
Yeah, I mean that would be the key, right? Because I already gave up all my speed on the entry, so I got to be able to mat it on the way out. So I think that's one other thing. And And, you know, I've watched people like, you know, Pallotta, you know, driving, and then he's a master on getting back on the gas super early on these front wheel drive cars or any kind of a car, right? So, yeah. So you know, like a lot of times we run comparisons, you know, when I get a chance to co-drive with him, and that's the spot where he beats me is I will brake just as early as he was, but he's just so much more aggressive on the exit. So basically mid corner, he's just matting it. And then he deals with whatever the car that comes to him. If the car is pushing, he just deal with it. If the car is loose, he deals with it. Where yep. I would try to modulate the back up and be as smooth as I can while I was accelerating out. So it's a lot less, you know, there's no commotion when I'm accelerating out. But I think him and Strano does that. You know, they just get back on the gas so much earlier, and then whatever happens, they just deal with it.
Yeah, it starts breaking loose, just open the wheel and hope it sticks.
Right, and then in my situation, I just don't have the, I think I don't have the confidence, or, I mean, I always want to say I don't have the skills. I think I can actually do it. I just don't have the confidence or, you know, because if it throws at me and the car gets loose, I know how to correct it and get out. I mean, I know that. But the thing is I'm always expecting not to do that, where these guys are expecting to do that.
Yeah, I remember watching one of the Nationals probably like 5-6 years ago. It was a big circle toward the finish or a circle in the course, and Strano left black marks, I think it was in the Mustang, like over half the circle. Like he was right at the limit of, I'm adding gas, I'm holding it together here, I'm adding gas. So he was at like the maximum level there enough that he was laying down some of the rubber to get extra grip.
Right. I always thought that, Sam probably gets upset with me if I say something like that. I always thought people like Sam and Brian Garfield, they would drive 110% everywhere, and then just fix the problems.
Yeah.
And then I know that I'm always driving at 90%, so I never get into any problems. Obviously that doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's where it literally comes back to my, I don't know how to convey this, but whoever's at the maximum grip for the line they're on. So if I take a tighter line, and let's say I'm a little bit at 95%, you could then take a wider line and be at 100%, but it might not make it up
right.
If you're too wide.
Right.
So, but obviously the fastest people are always on pretty much pretty close to the same line, and it really is who is getting to and probably over at times every 5 seconds or 10 seconds. They're going over the maximum grip level.
Right.
That's how I really look at it: is where am I at? Where should I be? How do I correct to get back there?
Right.
So I think you're right. They are at 110% sometime. Maybe it's half the time. Maybe it's not. That reminds me, I was at a Pro Solo, I think, in New Mexico. And I happen to know that Kevin Wenzel's working the corner. And I'm coming into it, and I'm locking up the front brakes in the Civic, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is terrible. So I run out there after my thing. I said, hey, Kevin, what am I doing? How bad is this? He goes, it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
He goes, you're doing fine. So once again, I was going over the maximum grip level, but at least I made it there.
Right.
So that, yeah, that's something I guess you can challenge yourself with this year, is to say, hey, what is it when I get there? Can you start feeling that? Am I there yet? Am I there yet? Am I not?
Right. Well, the one thing that was kind of interesting that started this year for me, or actually the last 3-4 months, was I don't know how to say this, but you know how people come back from the autocross run and if they ran really fast, they have the shakes.
Oh yeah.
I've never had the shake in my life ever. Never did. Until 3 months ago, 3-4 months ago. Actually, no, let me take that back. Well, the time flies. The very first time I had to shake was Saturday at Wilmington in a tour in the CSP car. I came back and I had the shakes. I couldn't stop shaking. But that was a fast run, right? So,
yeah.
So from that point on, I didn't have the shakes at Nationals, not at all. But then after I got back, there were 2 or 3 events I started getting the shakes. And now – every once in a while, I would actually get a shake in the ND when I had a good run, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'm wondering if it's I'm really driving at 100% or it's just an onset of Alzheimer's.
Now you're about to say, how old are you now? And just kidding.
I'm 50, so I have no idea what's going on. Maybe it's a diabetes or something like that.
But do you notice you're excited when you finish? You're like, wow, that was cool.
Yeah. But you know, I would never come out and put my hands up and my hands would never shake. But every once in a while now it will. So you know, I hope it's autocross induced, not physically induced.
Yeah, something you're now pushing yourself enough, or something's happening in that car. I mean, those things are amazingly fast.
Yeah,
it's just talk about not braking. And I think you can mash the gas pedal in as soon as you're even thinking about lifting up the brakes, you should probably mash it. I'm just blown away at how fast those cars can
be.
They're,
I mean, I think when you're running 275 A7, there's so much grip. In fact, another thing that was funny, I never really thought about sitting in a really, really tight seat was a good thing. I can tell you that my client and I went out and I bought a 16-inch Kirky intermediate race. And then of course, the Garfields kept on telling me that I need to go into 15s. And I told him that, hey, look, you know, I'm 200 pounds. You guys are at 110. You know, no, we can't. I mean, 16 is already tight enough. I can tell you that in 16, the CSP car, I was getting my rib cage was hurting because I was sliding inside a car so much. Right.
Wow.
Because there's so much centrifugal force that's pushing you one way or the other, and then
you got enough grip, yeah.
Yeah. So I went to a 15. So I went to a 15. Inch wide seat now. Now I can barely sit in there, but at least now I sit in there, I can actually drive. You know, I don't have to hold on to it and get hurt. You know.
How does the CSP car compare to the F-125? Like, are they both abrasive? I mean, that's why I keep thinking, oh, it'd be kind of fun to do F-125, but will it beat the heck out of me?
Well, F-125, you know, it's kind of hard. It depends on how bumpy is the lot, right?
Yeah.
FedEx is not necessarily the smoothest lot. And sometimes there's these indentations that when a course designer wasn't thinking, they actually put a turn or, you know, certain sections into these indentations, and then you're flying. You know, I've been in F-125 cars where my butt was 2 feet off the seat because it was pulling me out. You know, I got to hold on to the steering wheel or else I get thrown over. And then also been Central PA and the Mid-State where, you know, they're just these, you know, you run over a bump and then all of a sudden the whole car is in the air, right? Those are rough. But I think, I don't know. I mean, I think CSP, if I say CSP car, probably generates more G.
I don't know.
I don't know if people believe it, but I think it does. I mean, the only difference I can think of is I'm 5 years older now. So I definitely feel more in the CSP car where it's really kind of just killing me.
Plus you're more advanced now, so you can get to the maximum grip.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I would think that, and especially a lot of times, you're running the shifter, you know. And again, I was out there having fun, so I was pushing as hard as I could back then based on what I could. But I think I can drive faster now, so I'm probably not taking all the G load. Yeah. Back then versus now.
So you mentioned you spun an Evo, which is impressive to me. Have you spun? Have you been spinning cars lately?
Not much. I don't think. That's probably one of the reasons why. The last 3 years I can actually feel what the car is doing. So that before the car gets out of shape, I will correct them.
So you're catching, you're at least getting what I'm kind of hitting at here is, are you going fast enough that you would generate a spin, except now you can catch it?
I can catch it. I can definitely catch it now. It's no longer something that, you know, I'll tell you, the first few years, if I go in, if the car started getting out of shape, and then I actually have to think about how to correct it. And of course, if I have to think about how to correct it, it's over, right?
It's too late.
Now, as soon as the car gets out of shape, just the slight movement, before it started moving, going in the other direction, I know that my foot is doing something, my hand's doing something to try to correct it. So I would never let the car get completely out of shape, because I think one thing that I learned as an autocrosser is if the car gets completely out of shape, the run is over.
I would never
let the car to get out of shape. It's, you know, at the same time that I want to carry speed, I want to be as precise as I can in that spot where I want to be. If the car gets out of that spot where I expect it to be, I got to correct that, or else that runs over.
Yeah, the run's over.
Right.
Yep.
So I would constantly correct as much as I can. I would never get into a situation where a car goes into a four-wheel drift and it's over. I don't even bother to make an attempt to try to come back when I get into that situation, right? I can fix stuff now. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'll admit to people, you do want to get to the point where at first you should be spinning cars, I believe, unless you have some car that just can't spin, because that means you're getting past the limit. You then have to figure out in a front-wheel drive car, you probably forgot to brake before you turn the wheel, or you start turning the wheel and you lift it and it, oh, went right around. If you're never doing that, you're probably never getting to the limit,
right?
Or unless you're a perfect driver, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's where at Pro Solos, I had to remind myself the last couple of years, I got kind of lazy. I went back and looked, and I'm like, man, I was always almost spinning or doing something. Because when you get 12 runs, six on each side, a lot of times you can just have a hero run on one side and a hero on the other side. So I had to, like, part of me is trying to ramp back up the aggressiveness at a pro. And I still do find myself in a big drift that basically blows the run. But it's basically I am getting past the limit still. And I try to challenge myself to do that, especially at a pro in the morning,
right.
The first part. It's like, let's see what we can do. That's why I just want to make sure you would tell me, yeah, I'm still getting to the point I would spin if I didn't correct it. So that's a good note to take.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was thinking was that there's definitely certain spots that I need to be more aggressive or less aggressive. I think I mentioned to you before sometimes that, you know, right now 90 degree left-hander and right-hander, I'm always under-driving.
Yeah.
And then that's something that I know that I need to work on, because I can, you know, when I co-drove with Mike Klein or Andrew Pallotta, you know, last month, I can see, I can keep it up in offsets and transitions and slaloms and stuff if I just amp it up a little bit. But on some of the right-hander and left-handers, they're just killing me, because their appetite of turning in and carry the speed and that the way that it bombs into that corner is significantly higher than what I normally consider.
Oh yeah.
But I know that a car can do it, so I should be able to do it. So I think that's probably one of the things that I have to kind of drive past, you know, on some of these turns.
Yeah, you have to experiment and try it.
I just have to go in harder. I mean,
have you ridden with them? Do you ride with people much?
Yeah,
or did you?
I mean, I don't ride with people that much, but I ride with them. Anybody who's fast and want to take me out for a ride, I'm definitely not going to say no. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I mean, you can learn things from everybody. It doesn't matter who it is, right?
Yep.
So
believe me, I had Bob Cleveland in the car years ago. I think it was Integra, and he went through a section. I was like, really? He didn't brake there?
Yeah.
That's what I find at Nationals. It seems like always on the west course in the back southwest corner, there's always a 90-degree turn. And I have to tell myself every year, you know, this is really fast. Somehow it just sticks back here. So just turn the wheel and try not to brake.
Right, right. And that's, I'll tell you, a lot of times I will learn how to drive slalom more aggressively by watching Simmons. Simmons and I have these car buying competitions and see who gets more cars. But I can tell you that every time I ride with him, I mean, he is the guy that never lives on the slaloms. He just doesn't live. I don't care what slalom it is.
And which car? Does everybody know what car he's driving?
Any car.
Oh, really? Yeah. So that's where I think front wheel drive, yeah, usually you cannot.
Well, I mean,
that's why I left foot brake if I need to slow down.
He's doing that in the F3 Corvette. I mean, I'm sorry, the F3 Mustang. he's doing that in a 2015 Mustang. So he just, for some reason, the slaloms, he's always all out. It doesn't matter.
And that comes back to knowing, we talked before, what are you really good at and what are you working on, I would say. People really need to know what they excel at, because I'm like that. I think I do better in slaloms and offsets than sweepers, since I've not done much road course racing at all.
Right. I think the interesting thing about Simmons would be, Philly's main autocross course nowadays is Warminster. And Warminster used to be a runway back in the old days. So their course is always slalom out, a little bit offset, slalom out, and they make a really tight U-turn and slalom right back in.
Yeah.
So if I kept on thinking that, you know, Simmons probably runs, 100 slalom runs, at least every year, right?
Yep.
And he's the course designer, and he's always the FTD or the top packs guy over there. So he's got to be good at driving slaloms. And the other person that I thought that was awesome at driving slaloms that I co-drove with was Greg Shoemaker, out of Florida. And I co-drove with him one time, and I can tell you that. Through a slalom, we were in the C5Z06. He was 8 miles per hour faster than me on the average.
Wow.
Throughout the entire slalom, right? And I can't understand how he did it.
Did you look at the distance in the slalom? Did he carry that much less distance? Maybe also.
No, he was just somebody just have talent in the slaloms. I mean, I'm telling you, you just, I don't know what he did. He just, he never lived. And I think I did ask him, I did ask him, you know, how he does it. What he did is he says that he goes in there and then his objective is always accelerate through the slalom. So, so he will, if he has to maintain a little bit, then accelerate, he would. Very rarely he will bomb into the slalom as fast as he can, then kill the speed and then reaccelerate back up.
Oh, I do that. But my goal is always, even if I think I'm breaking the second or third cone, I want to make sure I exit, well, depending on what's at the end of it.
Right.
I usually want to make sure if it's a fast section afterwards, I exit as fast as possible, just like a 180.
Yeah, you know, and again, maybe, you know, I'm not sure if it's car dependent or whatever, but I know that when he goes in there, he's carrying as fast as he can on the entry, that he will maintain whatever the speed. One thing I did learn from the data is if I ever hit a break in the middle of the slalom, sometimes I would drop 5 miles per hour, right?
Yeah.
And to build that 5 miles per hour back in the middle of the slalom is very difficult.
So you basically overbroke.
Yes.
And it took, probably take a cone or two to get back.
If I bombed into the second or third cone, if I overdrove into it, that would become a problem. So
yeah, you weren't making up, because in that case, braking too hard, it's so easy to take 5 miles an hour off that.
Yes.
Had you just gone in there a little bit slower and found the maximum speed, better off overall.
Right. So the thing is if I go in there, when you mentioned that you broke in the second or third cone, maybe you're only scrubbing it off 2-3 miles per hour, if that, right?
Yeah, if you do it right.
Yeah. And I think that at times, you know, when I go into a corner, if I drove it in too deep and then all of a sudden I got behind, I would brake a lot, and sometimes I would kill 10 miles an hour. If it's 5 to 10 miles an hour, I would never be able to make it back up. I mean, I know that on the 6 or 7 cone slalom, I actually did some tests on it. If I kill more than 5 miles per hour by the second cone or the third cone, I would never make that speed back up on the exit.
So if there was a tight section there, you'd want to even break ahead of time and come through the tight cone at the maximum speed to set up the rest of it.
Right. But nowadays, you know, I can tell you something that's stupid. I mean, nowadays when I drive on the slalom, I just try to carry as fast a speed as I can. Think about it. I just please make it, you know.
Hey, if it's a pro solo, it might work.
Yeah,
until
there's no more strategy. Just go in and slalom as fast as you can.
I can tell you, I still fight this at times, probably at nationals too much. I still think I'm going to pull off a hero run sometimes.
Right.
Like somehow I'm going to magically do something different. And oddly enough, I am sometimes the best right out of the gate. It's just like no expectations, just go out there, look ahead, and drive.
Right.
And then, oh, no, I'm going to go faster. Well, I tell lots of people, if I talk to them about things, at any course you're doing over and over again, whether a pro or you get 3 runs, most likely your braking zone, which is where I become a hero, try to brake later and later, keep the gas just a little bit longer.
Right.
You're going faster each run probably, so you need to actually move your braking zone back a few feet or start a little sooner,
sure.
I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can hold, I'm going so fast. Just a little bit, oops, blew the brake zone.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on the last couple of years. I definitely, you know, I try to drive as hard as I can, but the interesting thing is I always end up finding a little bit more room to improve, which I'm happy about. So, but it's a psychological thing to think about, you know, because let's say after the first run, I'm 1.8 seconds behind Andrew Pallotta, right, which is sometimes normal. But the thing is, in about 3 runs, I mean, he's going to improve by another 8 tenths, 9 tenths or something like that. But sometimes, you know, like if I don't give up, I can probably make that 1.8 back. So I end up to be half a second slower than he is, you know. So the thing is, you know, like, but I know that that's a lot of psychological thing to think through, because before, you know, I'm 2 seconds behind, it's over. So I stop trying. But at least now I know the last couple of years, I don't stop trying. I mean, I'm trying.
You know, it's
yeah.
possible.
Yeah.
Now, the advice I was given was don't ever look at other people's times.
Right.
Have you ever done that?
I try not. You know, there was an event I did, I think last year at Wilmington, the very first Wilmington match tour, I did really well there. And that was the only event, that was one of the events I never really know who did what. I just drove on my own. I didn't even know I drove with Randall Prince. I didn't even know what he ran, you know. And then I ended up doing really pretty well. So, I tried it. But the one thing that's kind of interesting this year is if I drive it and then I look at somebody, you know, really fast, and then they come back and say they're 7 tenths faster, right? And then that actually gives me a little bit more motivation and say, I'm going to go harder.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is. I think if he asked me the same question 2 years ago, I would have think that I would have preferred not to know so I can continuously improve on my own.
Yeah.
But I think the last year or so, once I drove consistently with everybody, you know where you stand. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I can go to a race, and let's say if I'm driving with you, I know how much I'm going to be behind you if I'm just driving my normal race, right?
I don't want you to think that. I don't want anybody to think that.
I know that, but the thing is I am sort of like that. So the thing is from my perspective, let's say if I'm normally half a second behind Andrew, and then I'm driving 1.2 seconds behind Andrew on my first run, then I know that. I got to step way up, right? But then the interesting part this year is let's say if I got to a point where I'm half a second behind Andrew, I'm not going to give it up because I know that on that last run, he can probably pull out a 1 second run, right, to be faster. So that means I have to pick up 1.5 second, and I don't know where to find it, but I'm going to try, right? So I think the biggest thing is I'm not going to stop trying. I guess that's the bottom line. I don't think anybody should stop.
You're able to use – knowing you're behind as a positive.
Yeah.
I literally at Nationals, I think a couple times now, I've tried not to know, and yet people come up and say, oh, you're ahead by this much or behind by this much. And I'm like, I don't want to know.
Right.
Because I don't want to try to push more. To me, this is all a competition with myself to see how fast I can be.
Right.
Regardless of what other people are doing, it seems like for me, necessarily knowing that somebody's up by 0.2 or a second, it doesn't help me. It's just not going to motivate me. It might make me press too much, I guess. I guess because I realized I will try to press, and yet when I don't press, I'm fine. But when I'm pressing, it doesn't work as well.
Right. I'll tell you one thing that probably the right way to put it. I think a lot of times every year, you know, I always do pretty poorly at Nationals. And then, you know, I don't know what it is. It's just I just never did well. And then every year when I drive home on the way home from Nationals, I told myself – I would never drive like a wuss again. You know, it's like every run I'm going all out, right? And then I started doing that 2 years ago. And then I can tell you that with that mindset of going all out every run, that itself made a big difference.
Yeah.
Right? So then what happened is of course, you know, after so many events, I kind of lost that mindset and started driving slow again. But I can tell you that, you know, sometimes I would tell myself, you know, a lot of times I would go out and try to buy a car that I absolutely can't afford, right? But I'm going all out. I don't care. I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
So why can I do that on something that's almost free?
Yeah, exactly. You already paid for it.
I already paid for this.
So I think
the mindset of never give up and go as hard as I can, you know, at least for me, you know, every once in a while it actually works. So that's kind of a mindset.
Yeah, once again, know thyself. And I just learned I really want to be like Andrew Pallotta. If he can take off a second when he's out at autocrosses, I still kick myself. Like sometimes, why didn't I improve much from the first run to the third or fourth?
He can take off anytime he wants to. No, just kidding.
Like I'm gonna start hanging out with Andrew and rubbing. They're like, why are you touching me? I need some of that magic.
Yeah. He you know, him and Strand are like the Bopsy twins. You know, they're driving exactly the same. You know, you gotta, every once in a while you got to kind of rub them a little bit, and then they're. And then all of a sudden you go faster.
A reason to move out east, another reason.
Yeah.
So tell me this as we kind of wrap up a little bit. What if you could drive anybody's car out there, what car and why?
Eric Hyman's.
You need a slow one? Oh, wait, he doesn't have a slow car,
no.
Does he?
No. No, I think if there's always that mystique about Godzilla, right? And I had to check.
Have you ridden in it?
And No, I drove it at Dixie. It was unbelievable. But then again, the car I never had to do any sweepers on a car. So all it was is transitions and slaloms and all that stuff. And that car is just awesome.
Yeah. See, I've always put it scared, whatever, wise. I don't want to get in fast cars. Oh. Some people make fun of me. Why are you still driving a slow Civic? I'm like, because I can figure it out. And it seems a lot cheaper than some of these other things that have a lot of power and brake.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is his car has five different modes, right? So there's a rain mode, and there's a Hello Kitty mode, and there's the normal mode, and there's a little bit of crazy mode, and there's an insane mode, right, or something like that, right? So all I know is I drove most of the time in the Hello Kitty mode, and that was already good enough for me.
You're like, this is amazing. Yeah. I like Hello Kitties.
Oh, and of course, I mean, you know, if I get a chance to drive Kiesel's car one time, that would be awesome. but I don't think that would ever happen. So,
oh, watching his videos, it's just insane. It's like zoop, yeah, acceleration, and zoop. I'm like, oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, and then I really don't have any fascination over, to be, I mean, not to make people unhappy, like A mod or B mod cars. In 2011, I had a chance to drive the Maryland FSAE car.
Yeah.
The one that took FDD in 2011.
Yeah.
And then after I drove that, I was like, that's good enough. I
mean, you're like, one and done.
Yeah, that was just, you just put your foot, mat it down to the floor and just steer. And that was that.
That's true. I guess with all the aero,
yeah,
you just go.
And I'm making a turn. I go, wow, it's not possible. It's doing it.
It's not possible. Am I on rails? How is this sticking?
Yeah. So that.
So who's winning the car ownership battle between what, you?
Oh, Simmons. Simmons is winning.
Tom,
Simmons is winning big time. I mean, he probably has 128 cars now. One person who's flying completely under the radar is you might have to cut this out because it's embarrassing. I don't remember his name.
Oh, it's okay. If
Terry Baker, right? I think Terry Baker has 140 some cars, but nobody really knows.
That's good. We got to get out there in the open. We get on the forums. We'll start asking.
Yeah.
We'll start figuring this out.
Right. So Terry Baker has probably had the most cars, and then and Simmons, and then I think Flanagan and I are pretty close. But
Tom and Annie aren't even in the running? Are they slow?
I mean, you can add Tom and Annie together, and they're still 30 cars behind me, I think.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, but here's the difference. Here's the difference. The difference is people like me, I mean, I don't want to say Terry, people like me and Simmons, we can't afford any of this stuff. You know, I'm a computer guy. Simmons is a mechanic, right? Most people think that we're millionaires. No, we're not. We just carry $1 million worth of debt.
Exactly. Like, can I get another one?
Right.
Yes. Okay.
And then Annie's car, or even Tom's car. I mean, Annie and Tom. You know, one of Annie's cars is like four of my car and Simmons's car.
I can relate to that, seeing that I have a couple of Chevy Sprint turbos. Hey, anybody want to drive that this year?
Right.
Van said he's not. If you're a mechanic, it might be handy. You could fix it up. You could buy it. Yeah, I own a couple too many turbo sprints. You could have a spare or two. I think Van, I'll go ahead and give a shout out, bought three turbo sprints.
Right. Yeah, but you can't count Van, though. Van never works.
He's working right now. He called me on the way in, and I couldn't even get the call. He's working hard, I'm sure.
He's working hard on the slopes.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, Van's another guy. That's why he won the Spirit of the Sport Award, too. He makes sure not only he's having fun, but as many other people as possible.
And I like to get it out there that all this Facebook pictures of, people's face gets superimposed on somebody else, right?
You started it?
I don't even know how to use Photoshop, okay? None of them was me.
There's actually quite a few apps now that my 7-year-old can do on the iPad or iPhone. So that if you need help, I can clue you into what you can do.
It's all Van. Let's just put it out there.
Van's the one.
Van
He's
is
got
the
one,
issue. Right? Me, like looking like a unicorn, that's not me.
That's not me.
I barely know how to take a picture.
I saw you were in the ocean recently. Of course, you didn't take the photo. I don't think your arm's that long.
No. And don't forget, I'm the one that couldn't let the brake. So that means that I couldn't do most of the other stuff neither.
I can't hold it. So what do you think of as your best event?
Ever?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think the most memorable event, obviously, is the event that I drove with Eric on, this Godzilla. I mean, that's got to be the most memorable one.
And most fun.
That was the most fun. I think that.
Oh, what events are the most fun?
No, that event was the most fun. No question. Because that event, everything just fit in. It was perfect. I couldn't, that couldn't be any better.
Godzilla makes the perfect event.
Yeah. And other events.
You weren't shaking after driving Godzilla?
No.
Did you have the AC on? I mean, does Hello Kitty
mode? Well, I was running Hello Kitty mode. So I think Hello Kitty mode only has 500 horsepower.
Only.
And then, and I think the insane one has like 710 or something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
And of course, Eric told me that it's usually the engine is capable to do 1,000, but they detune it down to 700 so that you can have a flat curve, torque curve all the way across to make it easy.
So it's somewhat manageable.
Yeah, to make it super easy to drive. Yeah, so that was that. And then the other two events I can think of, the Wilmington Match Tour, I did really, really well. That was my first big event with my FRS that I bought from Pallotta in STX. And then, I did really well out of everybody there. And then last year over at Toledo Match Tour, that was fun. I went to the Final Four, which that never happened before. But I had a great time doing it the whole entire time. So those are the memorable events for me.
And how about cars? Which of your cars stand out to you that you've raced?
It's kind of hard to say, actually.
Or dare try to run through the cars.
I think, do you want me to run through the cars?
Yeah, let's hear this. If you can. What's your number? Does your wife ask you, what's your number?
Right now, how many cars I have?
How many have you raced? Of yours, how many have you owned in autocross?
I would say probably close to 30.
Gah!
Yeah. But out of the 30, I mean, there were 5 shifter cars, so it's really 25, I guess.
Oh, yeah, proper cars. I probably haven't driven 25 different cars in autocross.
Yeah. I did, in the beginning, I went through, I had a Miata, then I had an Evo. Then I got into 2 C-Mod cars. I had a 81 Van Diemen and an 85 Renard. So I did C-Mod a little bit. And then I bought a Caterham. I had 2 Caterhams. That was crazy. And then I went to the 5 shifters. And in between, I had a STS Civic that
really?
Yeah, that
we're homies.
AJ Avila actually drives in DC right now. He's really fast in there. And then I had a Neon that I bought for Tony Savini at one point. And then I decided to kind of learn how to autocross, and that's when I bought the C5Z06. Then I got a Grand Sport.
Let me interrupt right there. From what I heard, you're supposed to start with a Miata, and then go to an S2000. And then you can have a C5. Just to let everybody know, do not buy the C5 to learn. Go ahead. After the C5, you got a Grand Sport.
Then I got a Grand Sport. Then I got out of Grand Sport. Then I bought the. Then I have the BMW 325 IS that I bought for $995, and that's called a toilet duck.
I like that. I Van had talked me about those quite a while ago.
I should have never sold that car. If there's a car that I shouldn't sell to, I sold it to Cale Buschmeyer. I should never sell that car. I mean, I don't know why I sold that car, but I should never sell that car. And then after that, then I had a FRS that I did with that I bought from Andrew Pallotta and built into STS car, and that was probably. That was probably the coolest autocross car that I've driven.
Okay.
For how easy it is to drive and how competitive it is.
Yeah.
They kept on breaking drive shafts, half shafts.
Oh.
So then I bought Strano's Focus ST, got rid of that, I bought the WRX. Got rid of the WRX because it kept on breaking transmissions, and I got into a CSP car. Then now I'm building another CSP car.
Did you just say you have 2 CSP cars?
Yeah. So I'm sorry.
Wait, this year you've had 2 different ones, or the first one versus this one?
Well, the first CSP car I bought from Rally Bahrain, right before Nationals. And then we figured out that we kept on flat spotting the car because the car has no ABS and both of us don't know how to modulate the brakes very well.
Yes, it's good. ABS is great.
Right. So then, I actually bought just recently bought a $1,900 99MB that's automatic, but it has ABS in there.
As ABS, you're going to swap.
And then we're doing the VVT swap, and we're doing all that work right now. So there's a lot of de-rusting and drilling, whatever we're doing to get that car together. It's been a fight.
Are you doing this in the house next to the tire changing machine?
Actually, we're doing it. We're right now. We have a joint venture. So Mike Klein, my co-driver, he's sort of an MB expert. He has an LS3 swap into his MB that has 440 horsepower. So he knows everything there is to know about MBs. So the car is actually at his house. He took everything apart, took the motor, took the transmission, all of that stuff out. I have the VVT motor in my house, and what I did is I took all the suspension parts that he took out, and then I'm cleaning up this all suspension part and drill out all the dead bolts and stuff. So basically it's a big joint effort, and we're doing all this work together. I mean, it's really great to build things together as a team,
True. Yeah.
So, and then, which before I kind of did everything by myself. And this time, you know, like he's a much better, you know, Mike is a much better, car person. I mean, as far as dealing with all that stuff than me anyway. So it's a good joint venture. It's great. It's been working awesome.
So you glossed over, I think you have a tire machine in your house, correct?
Yes. I have a tire machine in a bedroom.
See, when people get dedicated like you, you'll get a tire machine, you'll put it in the bedroom, and your wife will be okay with it.
Well, actually, it's, you know, the most of the holidays where I, you know, when, this is how bad it got. I realized I have car parts and tires and rims and all that stuff in every one of my rooms. Every one. So the kitchen, living room, dining room, in-laws' bedroom, my bedroom, you know, every room, a foyer.
My wife has been complaining about the two brand new Rival S's. Boeing wants to buy them. They're 15 for Civic.
Oh no!
In the basement, in front of the treadmill, where no one walks. They're in the corner.
Yeah. There are right now. I think there are right now probably 50 to 60 tires. Most of them corded everywhere.
I mean, Danny, you need to go write a book for how to have the ability to live with somebody or other people and get away with that.
Well, let's put it this way. I think Klein really never really told me in person, but he kind of hinted to me that if I'm going to be keeping, you know, being this sloppy, he won't co-drive with me anymore, right? so this is my co-driver doesn't want to co-drive with me, and not my wife. And that tells you how good my wife is.
Now, what's the smell like? I mean, maybe do the smells? Anybody else in the family get the shakes lately from all the?
No, both of us are under the weather. We can smell anything.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, when you reach 50 some years old, you just smell like an old guy. So we don't.
No, you smell like a tire guy. I'm pretty sure that if you're out and about, somebody's be like, you change tires.
No, we don't. We don't. Trust me. We don't smell anything but an old guy.
Oh, wow. Danny, this has been fun. I am so glad you were willing to share all the thoughts and comments. And do you have a lot of videos up online? Is there any place you want to direct people to?
Well, I mean, I used to load all my videos into into YouTube. But lately I've been lazy because Facebook seems like it's faster upload. So I just load up to my Facebook now. But there's a lot of stuff on YouTube. I usually put my name in there, so it's probably all in there. I mean, there you'll see the F-125 spin 7 times at FedEx, and that would be me. Oh, wow. So
cool. We'll link to that in the show notes. And it's Danny, DannyKao.
Yep.
Oh, tell me this. Do you play video games, go-kart? What else do you – do anything else to try to practice?
Well, I don't play nearly as many video games as I should. Last year I did a lot of GT6 and GT5. And then off-seasons, a lot of times we'll go do enduro go-karting. But this year just so many car fixing. And then actually this winter, you know, starting in December in D.C., until February, there are actually 6 autocross events at Summit.
So y'all like the warmth.
Amazing. I don't know how we got all this stuff, but I'm trying to go to every one of them anyway. So I really don't feel that I'm that deprived. I mean, it's not autocrossing every weekend, but you know, I got to clean the house at some point. So
you need to go ahead and rent a truck and put all the tires in there and head off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly.
You need to upload some photos or a video of the house.
Oh no! I mean, you just pick a local landfill. And that's what it looks like.
Oh, did you put any Christmas lights on any of the tires or the tire machine?
No, because I don't have any money to buy Christmas lights. They all went to the tires.
We can send you. We need to decorate that next year. I maybe this year. What the heck? It might should have lights on it all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Danny, let me know anything else. You got what else you thinking of?
No, I blab enough.
Hey, that's why radio works and podcasts work. You have to talk.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I hope people can listen to this and learn how to go slow. You know, and don't go too fast. Let the old guy win sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And Danny's class is giving the benefit of the doubt.
I have never trophy at the Nationals after 10 years. I mean, I need a charity at some point.
How close were you? What's your closest you've been?
3 years ago, I was 0.149 away from the last trophy spot, so a tenth. Mm.
This year, you like to go and have fun. You said you're different at Nationals. I've seen that with people, including myself at times. How about let's just have fun?
Oh, no, I'm always having fun. There's no question about that. So
then less fun, more fun, less something.
Well, you know what? You know, it's like Nationals is a party. I would never miss it. You know, whatever it is, I'm going to go. And then I'm going to always enjoy it. You know, that's the time that we, you know, people eat at Laszlo's at my expense because I kept on losing the card bet. But, you know, I can't miss that, right? So I'm getting to a point where, you know, I'm going to enjoy every event the way that I know how to enjoy it. And I really don't care about the results because I know that every once in a while I'll do well, and every once in a while I'll stunk, but it's not going to take that fun away. So
so did you go to Nationals your first year?
Second year.
Okay. So that's something else I did that first year having no business, but that helped hook me.
Yeah.
Seeing like almost 1,000 cars or whatever, and you'd see 60 S2000s. It was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy.
Right. But I can tell you, I mean, if there's anything that I like to share is the first year I went to Autocross, I went to Nationals, you know, it's my second year, but I didn't really know anybody other than Mike, Mike Neri, and then Sam Strano, some of the DC guys I know. But when I got there, I didn't, you know, it was the last year at Topeka, I didn't really know anybody. When I got home, I actually thought that, that it wasn't that much fun because I never really had a chance to kind of go out and do stuff. And believe it or not, I'm naturally shy. No, just kidding. But I can tell you that the second year I made a point of just to go enjoy it and actually, you know, experience everything that I can experience out there. Then after the second time that I went there, you know, it was just the best event ever. I think the most important thing about going to National, regardless if you've never been there, try to enjoy the entire process. Don't think about it just to go racing and then try to do well at races. It's really about just go see the spectacle.
Yeah.
Once you got to know the spectacle, and seen it, and then actually meet with everybody, and then. Now it's just a party. I just go there to have fun, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's out there to see people that they haven't seen for a while. It's a great time. It really is.
Yeah. You did a great job selling it. Next year, 1,300 people will be there.
Yay.
2016. Well, cool. Great. It's been great chatting. And we will link to anything you want to link to in the show notes once again. Danny, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Totally my pleasure. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Kinch.
You're welcome.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Okay, we could talk or not talk, but you probably need to get home now. Yeah. It's getting late.
I need to go swimming at some point. But hopefully Jody gets better.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
No, but this was fun. This was fun. I just kept on blabbing. I'm not sure if it's good or bad.
No, that's perfect. So one of my dreads is some of the people, like John Ames, he'll talk, but some people, Kevin Winslow, I don't know. Will I have to pull more stuff out? I don't really want to interject too much. I just want to add some little thoughts, thinking, oh, would that help somebody?
Right.
Because I could record myself for hours. I did that on my business podcast. That doesn't matter. I'm going to keep doing videos and tell people what I think I'm doing racing. And
right.
I think people will get a kick out of hearing from so many people. That's where Bob Klingler, oh, no, I've got nothing to add. I'm like, you don't get it. Just telling us the history of when you started and what you drove and –
Right. I thought it was kind of, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting because I never, obviously there's, you know, we have no script or anything, right? So the thing is I don't know. I just feel like I'm just chit-chatting I've never really tried to make a special effort on anything. It's just, you know, just having a good time kind of a thing, right? So,
yeah.
So no, this is totally cool.
That's where I was trying to get Van said he would and then he didn't. Ian Mannix said he would and goes, I said, send me some stuff. Like, what do you do coach-wise? When did you start? So for my other business podcast, I can ask people, hey, what do you want to talk about? Have you written a book I can read?
Right.
With this one, it can be the same questions over and over again. Your best event, what was your first car? I think people will want to hear some of that. So I can come up with some of the stock questions.
You know who's the perfect person to talk to about this?
Who?
And he is a professional, Julian Garfield.
I don't think I know Julian, but I'll definitely.
Julian's been interviewed so many times, and then he actually gone through media training. And he knows exactly what he needs to talk about, and then is always going to present it in the most professional manner. I'm telling you, it's going to be good.
Okay. And that's the other thing is, since I don't quite know everybody, I just, the only reason I thought, okay, I've already done lots of podcasts. I know I talk too fast. I can't understand everything, but I'm like, I should so do this just for the community. I'm like, people, you just can't get, like, we can't autocross every month out of the year. We've had snow on the ground here for like 2 months now.
Right.
It's like, what? Usually we do autocross every month of the year, but it's been a little crazy.
I mean, I can introduce you to Julian.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh, no, definitely. I'm not sure where he's going to go. I mean, I think he's going to college this year. He will either go to Maryland or Kansas. And if he goes to Kansas and Texas, he'll be going in under some kind of FSAE deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like they're can't, I mean, what's his name? God, I'm getting old. I don't remember people's name very well. Clancy is
recruiting
him to go to Kansas.
Oh, that's some of the guys here. I think it was Kevin Winslow and who was it? Ian Mannix and maybe Chris Dorsey. They were trying to find out if they could sign up at a college, like one class, and build an FSAE car.
Well, you can. If you're a student, you can.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I mean, we got guys in D.C. that used to do that. I think it's either Mike Stanley or Mike. I mean, they're last year. I mean, they're done. Mike Cook, I think, got his master's or PhD already, but he just stuck it in there. Just take one more class and drive that 1 year.
I mean, I wish I understood more about cars and all the stuff. Man, I just, yeah.
You know,
like you're saying, it's more fun, I guess, if I was wrenching on cars with somebody. It's like skiing. I don't ski or snowboard much anymore because going by myself just isn't that much fun.
Yeah, but you know something? You know what Mike Cook, he turns out to be? So he did the FSAE thing, and then he raced, and then after he finished and got his master's or PhD, I'm not sure what it was, you know who he's working for now, right after he got out of school? He's now working for Tony Stewart, and he is the chief chassis engineer for Denica Patrick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the number 10 car at NASCAR.
Yeah, that's where one of the guys, he raced with me a couple years ago, Gabe. He was working for Honda for quite a while.
Right.
He's like, Honda doesn't pay anything, so he's now working on the sailboat, the Spirit Cup or America's Cup freaking sailboat.
Right. Yeah.
He did not like working in the racing world. He said it was just a bunch of people with money, and they all had attitude. And
yeah, no, it's tough. I mean, you know, what we're doing, you know, for fun and all that stuff, that's as much as I want to do. I mean, I can't imagine how, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, like, you know, Hike Hotter is one of the, you know, it's one of my heroes now, right? Because it's so cool, right? That you actually know the guy and he does that. But I don't know how he does it. I mean, I really don't know.
So I want to interview him too. And I want to find out. I know he video gamed, obviously.
Right.
I don't ever play video games. A couple of years ago, I was going to buy it. Where I live now, we don't actually have high-speed internet that's not limited.
Right.
So I can't even do it. But I'm like, would that really help me?
Yeah, it will. I mean, I can tell you that last year when I played GT6, that's how I learned trail braking.
Oh, okay.
And then that's how I learned how to carry into a corner at a certain speed. And then actually, I think if anything, that actually I can practice – the modulating throttle actually comes into play because it's so sensitive with the throttle, especially if you pick a high power car. So then roll on and come off the throttle and roll on the throttle is a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it does help. It does help get the timing back. Yeah, for sure. Number one. I mean, no question about it.
Yeah, I don't think I raced once since Nationals. I'm like such a slacker. And I'm like, this year I'm going to do it. I'm going to make a lot of races, and my car is going to be shipped tomorrow. They got to call me, actually, to Ron Williams' shop in Kansas.
Right.
I want him to go through all of it, all the bushings I meant to do 2 years ago, put long shocks on the car, check my engine, fix it.
Right. Yeah, that'll be the easiest way to do it.
Oh, literally, he said he would do that, and I talked to him for a good hour. I said, can I record you? Well, yeah. I'm talking to him like, Ron, we can have two or three podcasts. You know so much about car setup and this and that. I'm like, some people are literally, they know enough stuff, whereas I don't think I know much about car setup or feel or.
Right. I mean, yeah, but the thing is, if you want to talk to Strano about this or, I mean, I'll definitely hook up with Julian too, but some of the guys on the East Coast, I know them pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, they would love to do this.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's my hope. That's why I told myself, well, I know a lot of people from coast to coast. So if they travel to events, I kind of know who the fast guys are. And at least I've said hi to them and chatted a couple times.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's where they can obviously pitch what they do with their business and More power to him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially somebody like Strano. I mean, he's gonna, you know, for this, it's, you know, it's almost like free advertisement for him, right? So
yeah, yeah. I just have to stay away from the floor mats.
Yeah, yes. Stay away from any topic that's controversial. Or
but do you think he'll do that?
Oh no. But the thing is you get more listen. You know, get more people to listen.
More fodder for the people to be like, hey,
that's
great.
Right. That's right.
And that's where Bob Klingler, when I did talk to him, he went off about, oh yeah, and they do this stupid thing, and I'm like, oh gosh, yeah. Okay.
But every once in a while, you gotta interview, you know, like maybe the you got to interview somebody who's controversial. Like, if you get a chance to interview Donald Trump, doesn't matter if you agree with him or don't agree with him.
Oh, yeah,
you got to interview him.
And the thing is, I could learn from anybody, whether it's Donald Trump or Obama. If I got to go out and have dinner with them, I could learn something. Whether I agree with them or not, there's something I agree with everybody.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where you seem like, obviously, you're like, I got to cut out the negative people. I mean, I cut out watching the news years ago. I have no cable TV.
No, I don't watch the news neither. So I don't know. I don't know what's up. I know what the big news is, but if anybody goes into a commentary, I usually get out.
Yeah. That's like when one of those airplanes disappeared. I didn't know for like 3 or 4 days.
Right.
I was like, what? Something's missing. I was like, oh, now I pride myself on that because the news wants to sell you the negative, negative, negative.
I'll tell you one thing that I try to do. I listen to the facts, and then as soon as the facts are over, somebody's trying to add a little bit more to it.
Good point. Yeah, be like, I know that a plane's missing. Okay, done.
Yeah. Once that's there, and then I don't want to see who. I don't want them to accuse anybody's fault or whatever.
Oh yeah, somebody shot somebody, and they're definitely Muslim or not.
I get the news, and then the facts of the news, and that's it. So
yeah. I agree. We're in the same boat. Yeah. That's where I don't think Van watches any news at all.
Yeah.
I keep trying to get him books to read and such, but he doesn't. I don't think he's taking in negative stuff too much.
Right. That's good. I mean, nobody needs any negative stuff in their life.
No.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we should have fun. No. It would go around. They're too short. You know, life is short. You got to.
Hey, you can only play so many rounds of golf in a year before you get hurt.
That's right.
See, I went and shot basketball today by myself just practicing. I used to play in college. All I did was play basketball.
Right.
I didn't play for the team, but I played. And I dated a golfer in college at some point. So we played 2 or 3 times a week for free. That's when I was addicted back in the day.
Right.
I'm like, oh, this is great. This is fun. And
I can tell you that when I in high school, my sophomore year to my senior year, I don't think there's a day that I didn't play basketball.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's the personality, man. Nothing you can do about it.
See, what I realize having kids now that we have a borrowed go-kart, I don't want to push them into it yet. As a kid, I wanted to be pushed.
Right.
I wish I would have played basketball. I grew up in the country.
Right.
So I couldn't, except for my little goal, I couldn't play every day.
Right.
Or I didn't. When I got to college, I played every day, and people then go, so where do you play? I'm like, I don't play at a college. I play here with you.
Right.
But that's where I think seat time, if you're trying to improve things, you really can't improve from autocross to whatever. It's, are you trying to improve and looking at what you're doing? And it's, all of us can be at least better at times. I'm not sure we'll be consistently better, but.
Right. But all we can do is try it.
Exactly, and have fun. And that's, for I think a lot of us, when we're having fun, we do better anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pressure. Some people can't deal with it at all, and some people can. But if you're having fun and relaxed, you usually do best.
Right,
so.
Right. That's exactly what's up. So.
Cool. All right, well, get home. Make sure she's getting better, and take a tire out and just say, Kinch encouraged me to get a tire out of here just for you, babe.
Yes, sounds like a good idea.
All right, Danny, I'll catch up with you.
All right, thank you, Kinch. Okay,
thanks,
talk to you soon.
Great, have a great night.
All right, bye.
Happy New Year, bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.